Welcome to Wheeling Free, a show without barriers.
I'd like to spend my holidays on the North Coast. How can I find accommodation suitable for someone with my disability?
I've recently been offered a job, but I can't drive a car or use public transport. How can I get to work?
Some friends and I have decided to work together for a better deal for disabled people. Who might be willing to help us?
Hi there, I'm David Bryce. Welcome to the program. Thanks for listening once again. Hi there to Joe Reeve.
Hi, David.
At present, those questions we just heard cannot be answered at one particular source. Now, the Consumer Information for the Disabled Resource Centre is seeking to fill this gap. Our guest today, Wayne Best, is the coordinator of this venture. Wayne, welcome to Wheeling Free.
Good afternoon, David.
What is your background, the first question we might ask you?
Well, my training is in psychology. I have an honours degree with a major in psychology from the University of New South Wales. But that's not particularly relevant to the undertaking at CID. That just happens to be the area that I studied in.
But you did community psychology. I should imagine that would be rather relevant.
Yes, it is and it isn't, Joe. There are some things that I learned in community psychology that helped me to appreciate the need for something like CID.
Mm.
And I suppose some of the things that I learned while I was studying will help me to do the job better.
Right. How did you get involved with disabled people from...
Well, while I was still a student, I was working part-time in the mornings driving a bus for the Australian Quadriplegic Association. And I met a lot of disabled people then, made a lot of friends amongst disabled people, and that was when I became aware that there are many things wrong in the situation that disabled people face that aren't really related to their physical disability. They're just the way things have been set up, things that can be improved and can make the situation a far better one.
In regard to the resource centre, what made you become involved in that?
Well, while I was driving for AQA, I was attending a number of meetings with the people from there, and I first met the group of people who were working on consumer information for the disabled. And as I say, I felt that perhaps I should explain just what it is that I felt was wrong with regards to the situation disabled people find themselves in. And it ties into what we were saying before about community psychology too. You see, every individual in society needs the opportunity to participate in decisions that influence their lives. And if there's a level of participation in decisions that suits each individual person, and if they don't have the chance to do that, then they can experience distress and anguish as a result. And you'll often find in clinics like the one I worked in as a student that people come in with psychological problems who really you can't help in a clinical setting working in a one-to-one arrangement. So the idea is to set about trying to change social relationships so that people have the opportunity to participate in decisions affecting them. Mm. It's the experience of powerlessness, of not being able to have any say in your own destiny, that leads people to trouble.
And what you're saying, well, how does that fit in with the resource centre?
Well, disabled people find that this is for them 1,000 times worse, because the everyday decisions that able-bodied people take for granted are denied to disabled people, because they have to rely on other people to provide the services, and other people control the money, and other people say what services will be provided when and where and how. So that although people are trying to help them overcome their physical disability, at the same time they're robbing them of this chance to participate in decisions affecting their own lives. Mm. Well, if people, disabled people, are becoming aware of this and are speaking out for a say, but in order to speak constructively, to act effectively, or even to be able to decide on a solid basis, they need to be well informed.
Well, Wayne, could you briefly explain the function of CID?
CID will act as a distribution point for information that's relevant to disabled people. A number of organisations referred to as peak organisations, for instance ACROD and the New South Wales Council of Social Services, have agreed that they will pass on the information that they collect to Consumer Information for the Disabled, CID, and we will do our utmost to make it readily available to disabled consumers, because at present information channels, the communication links that exist, don't extend down to the individual, and that's where we'll be trying to fit in to get the information out to individuals who want it.
Are disabled people involved in the centre at this stage?
The idea originated with disabled people, and a steering committee was formed. I was appointed as a result of a grant from the Handicapped Persons Bureau, which was obtained by the disabled people who originally had the idea. And for a while I've been working more or less on my own, but disabled people are now becoming involved once more, in that I have a number of volunteers coming in at different times during the week to help with the tasks that are to be done, and I envisage that even there will be more scope for involvement by disabled people as it progresses.
Yeah, transport's a big problem for them. Are you able to provide transport at this stage?
No, we can't provide transport, Joe, but in a lot of cases we can work something out. One of the volunteers I have coming in at present comes in by taxi and we reimburse him for his fares. That's not an ideal situation for us. We can't particularly afford to keep on doing that, but we hope that we'll establish contacts to be able to provide lifts for different people. I'm confident it'll come together. It's a matter of time.
And Wayne, what has happened so far? Have you had many queries from the public or from handicapped people in regard to various functions?
I have had a lot of queries, David, but I haven't been doing anything to try and attract them. Just from word of mouth, people hearing about the fact that I am working to establish the information resources, they ring up to find out whatever it is they want to know. But I haven't done anything about advertising what we're up to, because I'm still at the stage of getting the information that's already available into an easily accessible system so that you can handle a phone call. I would like to say too that I hope as a result of this show I'm not flooded with calls in the next week, because although answering calls is our main aim, at present it's preventing us from getting going because it takes so long to deal with.
So when do you plan to be fully operational?
I'd envisage 6 weeks. Would be a minimum.
Next year is the International Year of the Disabled Person. What role do you hope to be able to play in that?
Well, one of the most common questions I find disabled people asking about IYDP is what is going to happen? We hear about lots of different committees coordinating activities and things like that. CID will hopefully be able to channel the decisions of these committees back through to disabled people. We also will probably be playing a role in promoting media access for the disabled people, establishing media contacts.
Wayne, what has been the reaction from other organisations who are supposedly set up for similar functions to your plan for this centre?
Well, I don't think there are any other organisations that are specifically geared to the same role as CID, although most organisations do play some role in distributing information. But nonetheless, the reception we've received from everyone I've been in contact with has been highly favourable. Everybody wants to know one central place they can approach for the answer to a variety of questions.
Great. Yeah. Well, I know myself, I used to work with the Commonwealth Rehabilitation Service, and many times we had queries over the phone similar to what we heard early on in the show, and of course the staff couldn't answer them because they didn't have that information at their fingertips. So I think it's a great idea in that regard.
Some of those questions, David, are in fact unanswerable. But even being able to tell somebody that over the phone saves them a lot of time chasing around trying to find out that they can't get help in that area.
Will you be receiving more funds in the future from the state government?
We've applied for some funds from the Royal Charity Performance at the Opera House. I haven't heard yet officially whether the submission was successful. but I have good reason to be confident. And I envisage that once we demonstrate the need and the effectiveness of CID, we will get continued support and extended support from the Handicapped Persons Bureau.
Yeah, Wayne, whereabouts are you situated?
68 Oxford Street, Darlinghurst. It's a community resource centre that's run by the Sydney City Council.
Fine. Wayne, our time's almost up. I think it's a great idea, the resource centre, and it's certainly needed in the community. Thanks for coming into the program.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Wayne Best, who is the coordinator of the Consumer Information for the Disabled Resource Centre. Before we go, Joe and I were in Canberra during the last week, and we had the chance to speak with Mr. Pat Lanigan, the Director General of Social Security. We asked him, would he like to come on the program and be interviewed? After a delay of some seconds, Mr. Lanigan said that he could do this, but only after the federal election. We wonder what Mr. Lanigan's worried about. This is David Bryce signing off.
We are privileged today to be speaking with Mr. Justice Michael Kirby, who is the Chairman of the Australian Law Reform Commission. He will be talking with David Bryce, David Marney and Joe Reeve.
So how did you first become interested in disabled people?
Well, there's a lot of law in the United States on disabled people. It's a matter that I began to research when I had to give some awards to some disabled people. And I think next year, with the International Year of the Disabled, there's going to be much more attention to the matter in Australia.
Mm. Are there many disabled judges and lawyers?
There are some. I know of none who are paraplegics. But I've no doubt that in time, with the greater medical care and technological developments that we see today, that that will happen too. There are certainly quite a few blind lawyers.
Yes.
Why do you think some people in the community, or many people in the community, have trouble coming to terms with disabled people?
Yeah. Well, one lawyer in New York who was himself struck down by polio at the age of one tried to analyse it, and he said that he thought the reason was that it was the rejection by ordinary people of disability, of death, of disablement, and just the feeling of fear, I suppose.
Yes.
I think that's at the heart of the problem.
Yes, I can understand that, because I tend to feel they push you away as a person, but they're really rejecting that idea related to themselves.
Yes. Well, this lawyer said it really is, as it were, an effort by the person to say, I wouldn't want that to happen to me, and I reject that as a notion because I don't want to think about it.
Mm,
and
yes.
I think the thrust of anti-discrimination legislation is to say, well, that is not a healthy approach, and we've got to try to ensure that disablement alone is not a reason for people losing out on opportunities in life.
Yeah.
I guess even more so in Australia, excuse me, in Australia, because being a great sporting nation and we've always prided ourselves on physical prowess and whatever, it's very hard for many Australians to look at someone who is obviously, you know, handicapped in some way and to be able to face up to it.
Well, I was never much of a sportsman, I'm afraid, at school. I was a bit of a swat. And I suppose I'm a typical Australian, and in the sense that I would have had before I began to think about it, much the same sort of attitude. And really, I think it's just a question of raising consciousness and getting people to face the problem squarely. And when they do, I think that they see that there are underlying motivations which, once you begin to question them, begin to fade away, or at least to be re-examined.
In the US, advocacy and advocacy training are an important part of Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Do you think Australians are so ready to insist on their rights?
Well, I think the history of our people has not been one of right assertion to the same extent as the United States. In the United States, kids are brought up at school and at their mother's knee with the Bill of Rights, and they are a right-asserting people. We are not. But I think things are changing somewhat, and anti-discrimination legislation is, I think, the first step towards people asserting their rights and questioning what their rights are.
Mm. One of the difficulties is that so many disabled people, unfortunately, having to get the services needed to live fairly normally, have to obtain those through institutions. When they've got something like rights backing them, is that going to create a lot of problems? Because there'll be the recriminations through those institutions on them. Will they be able to exercise them?
Well, there's always institutional resistance to change, and nowhere does one see that more clearly than in the law. The law itself has so many time-honored institutions, 600, 700, 800 years old. But we live in a time of great change, especially great technological change.
Right.
And I think people are just going to have to adjust. And if it's in a matter of adjusting to remove unfairness, then that's a thoroughly good thing.
Hmm. Why have you advocated legal rights for the disabled yourself personally?
Well, I was in a position where I had to present some awards, and that got me looking at the issue. And I was really simply drawing attention to what had happened in the United States. By and large, our legal system follows the United States about 20 years later.
Right.
And I think we can look to some of the developments there, not all of them, but some of them, and say, well, in the developments in that great country are examples for us.
Do you think that changes in the law, as in rights, would lead to changes in community attitudes? Or does it only work the other way? And therefore, do you see any risk of a backlash?
Of course, there are risks of backlash, and one must be constantly on one's guard for that, but I have an optimistic view that the law can play a part in laying down community standards, in educating the community. And I think the success of changes in racial discrimination indicate what can be done. I think Australia, when I was a boy, was a country with distinct racial discrimination. Mm. Indeed, it was part of the banner of our country, the White Australia policy. Mm. And yet, within a space of 20, 15 years, I think there's been a radical change in community attitudes, and now we're looking at other forms of discrimination, and I think we'll see changes there too.
So you see that other disadvantaged groups, by following the leads of racial discrimination and learning from their examples, could do that, do so to favour their own interests?
History is a series of waves, and one sees one wave after another. I think the liberation of people from religious discrimination came first, and then racial discrimination, and now I think we're in the midst of the sexual discrimination phase. I think we'll move on to other forms, including the discrimination against the handicapped.
Mm. That'll be tremendous, because in that area, unfortunately, because we come through usually through so much medical sort of areas, we are not seen as people so much as problems, whether it's the way that it is classified, and they see us on that particular level so much.
But you're not unique in that. I mean, the Negro problem was seen as a problem.
Yes.
Women's rights were seen as a problem, and just insensitive, unquestioning attitudes in society are now changing, and they're changing to some extent because of legal rules which have provided machinery to which people of goodwill can go and make a complaint and have it investigated.
Mm.
One piece of machinery that's been used in the States for groups to establish their rights has been class actions. Do you think this will come about in Australia?
Well, one of the tasks which the federal government has given to my commission, which is a federal commission, is to advise whether we should have class actions in Australia. Of course, a class action only aggregates or adds up claims of individual people, and unless you've got the right in the individual, you can't add the claims together. Nil and nil makes nil.
Mm-hmm.
But class actions are, I think, a useful facility for expanding the courts into an effective system of helping to change society, because a big case is more likely to be useful than a small case.
Do you personally feel that the government is fully aware of the problems of handicapped people?
I think the government, and governments generally, state and federal in this country, are not fully alive to the problems of the handicapped. And I think one of the advantages of programs such as this is that one should seek to raise community consciousness about the issues that are at stake. It is really a function of education, and I see your role, if I can say so, as being one of educating the community to the issues that are involved.
So not only our role, but for all handicapped people, it's the role of the handicapped to get out and educate them. The yes. public themselves.
Not only that, but to the friends of the handicapped, the families of the handicapped. If you add them all up, it's a powerful, large force. And it's really just a question of making people deal with that New York lawyer said, face up to the issue, face it squarely, and know some handicapped people, and know that really when it's all boiled down, like Negroes and others, they are just other human beings, and that they oughtn't to be the subject of unfair discrimination.
Yeah, so we should be able to get over that. We're just ordinary people like anybody else.
Fear, distance, not knowing people causes all sorts of irrational attitudes to arise, and it's when you actually get to know people that you realise that those are not properly based, and you question them, and when you question them you find that they're not justified.
I think many people still associate physical handicap with some sort of mental retardation, which in itself creates barriers.
Can I say, I think the next wave will be dealing with the problems of the mentally handicapped.
Yes.
And I would hope that one of the tasks of the Law Reform Commission in the future will be to look at the law of the mentally retarded people, because there's no doubt that many of the liberties and rights that we give to ordinary citizens are not always enjoyed by those people. I think the law of mental health oughtn't to be overlooked in our enthusiasm for looking after other disabled
groups. Right.
We should be Catholic in our attitude to helping people who are the subjects of discrimination.
Sure.
A factor that concerns many disabled people is that of compensation. Can you see any changes resulting in Australia in the next few years? One great problem is the large sums of money, and there's no advice, there's no backup follow to what to do with this. There are many disgruntled people 2 or 3 years later feeling they've lost large sums of money through misinformation.
Well, as you know, we had a great inquiry in this country a few years back by Mr. Justice Woodhouse from New Zealand, and he suggested that we should adopt a system as in New Zealand, by which instead of the lump sums to the few, there should be a proper system by which all persons who suffer disability are given compensation during their disability and are given rehabilitation and so on. That hasn't been introduced yet, but I look to the day when we'll have a system similar to that of New Zealand.
Can you suggest ways by which groups as ourselves could lobby for such a introduction?
Well, you'll realise that I've got to be a bit careful in getting
involved. True.
I think in the democratic process it's entirely legitimate for people to say, well, here was a report which provided a form of change and improvement in the law, and to write to members of parliament and to ministers of the crown and to ask what's happening about these reform suggestions.
In other words, we've got to come out of the woodwork more. Be noticed.
And in this matter, the relevant minister is Senator Guilfoyle. She's the minister in charge of the Woodhouse scheme proposals. And I think the basis of the scheme was a universal system of compensation and rehabilitation, not just if you could prove fault or negligence, but for all people who suffered disabilities.
I see.
They were looking at a national compensation scheme.
That was what the Woodhouse scheme proposed. Essentially it said that people who get injured, whether at work or on their way to work or at home, should get some form of compensation. The tall poppies would lose a little. In other words, you wouldn't get the massive verdicts for the few, but everybody would be covered. And they have that scheme in New Zealand. It hasn't bankrupted the country. It's cut down on some of the income of lawyers. It's cut down on administration costs, but it's been, I think, a general success.
Yes, that's a lot of the problem, isn't it? Because in so many situations, so much money is sort of absorbed in all the very professional area without a lot of it getting through to the individuals.
I think this is what Woodhouse tended to show, that in Australia something like a third of the total fund was being spent on administration.
Right.
Some of that is inescapable, because whatever scheme you're going to have in a national system, you're going to have some costs. But I think the notion of fighting out compensation cases as if we were dealing with the negligence action of Village England is really trying to provide for a great modern social problem in a very old-fashioned way, and I look to the day before the end of this century when we've changed all that.
Justice Kirby, thank you very much for coming into Wheeling Free.
This is Ian Young with you for Consumer News. This month's issue of Read, the magazine about rehabilitation, education and access for the disabled, is out now. Read is a journal of the New South Wales Advisory Council for the Handicapped. In this month's issue, there is an article on the Wheeling Free program. Should make interesting reading. You can obtain your copy from the New South Wales Advisory Council for the Handicapped or by contacting Consumer Information for the Disabled by phoning 312606. Well, that just about brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Wheeling Free. We'll be back the same time next Sunday.